Hello, and welcome to Tolerable Risk, the podcast for NGO, nonprofit, and charity professionals who manage risk. I'm your host, Sabrina Siegel.
With more than 20 years in the nonprofit sector and 15 years at the senior level, Lori Stanley understands the complexities of nonprofits. She has worked at local, provincial, and global organizations, leading major organizational reviews and change management initiatives. Her experience includes a globally based social enterprise, where she diversified a provincial office from a single service organization to a multi-service organization and developed an international, national, and provincial presence. Lori brings a unique mix of private and public sector, nonprofit, and for-profit experience to her consulting work. Her social work and mediation background enables her to lead and manage the people or human side of change while driving business strategy and objectives. In addition to consulting, she currently serves as a board director for a charity and a healthcare. Lori, thank you so much for coming on Tolerable Risk today. I'm really excited. We're going to be talking about strategy development in the third sector, particularly for small to medium-sized, low to no resource organizations. But before we dive into the topic today, for people who aren't familiar with you or the work that you do, can you just introduce yourself a little bit and let us know how you got into the third sector?
Absolutely. And thank you. I appreciate the invite. So my consulting firm is ever so unique. We called Lori Stanley Nonprofit Consulting. I help empower nonprofits to deepen their social impact through clarity, focus, and strategy. I work with for-profit businesses, charities, and social enterprises. And my focus is on small to medium nonprofits to build their organizational culture, develop and execute strategy, create their vision, mission, values, and stakeholder engagement plans. And I am located on beautiful Indigenous treaty lands between Toronto and Niagara Falls, Canada. While my background and education are in business and leadership, I also have a degree in psychology and social work. So, of course, in terms of sharing with you how I landed where I am, I'm going to say it all started in my childhood. As a child, I had an innate passion for helping those in need. I found myself reaching out to kids that my classmates had isolated. It was in those moments that the seeds of serving others were sown. And I had parents that were very actively involved in our small community in Ontario, Canada. So serving and supporting our community was truly a family value. I started out in the trenches. I was a direct service worker in the nonprofit field, connecting with multiple families and witnessing firsthand the transformative power of nonprofit services in healing, particularly from a trauma-informed lens. And as I progressed from manager to executive leader, that's when I was introduced to the intricate world of strategy. The concept intrigued me, and I would say that I was curious. It was more of a feeling. And for those of you who have experienced that, something that lights you up, fuels your fire, then you get it. And I saw strategy like creating a puzzle. And I relished in the challenge of searching for the missing pieces and figuring out where they fit in, all with the aim of achieving a target and creating meaningful impact. Throughout my journey, I've had the privilege of working with diverse organizations on a local, provincial, and at a global level. I gained valuable experience in both for-profit and social enterprise sectors, as well within the private and public organizations. However, most of my work has been dedicated to the nonprofit sector because that truly is where my heart lies.
Wonderful. Such an interesting background. And I love how you have on the ground experience. You were talking about your time at volunteering and working with charities and nonprofits. So you've seen, as they say, how the sausage, or I guess if you're a vegetarian, how the salad is made, right? From beginning to end. You have a very interesting point of view on the whole process, running an organization and then implementing programs. So what a great point of view that you bring.
Exactly. And it serves me well. And it just seemed to be like a natural progression in the sense of when I was doing direct service, I was able to work with individuals and families. And then I became a manager and I'm like, wow, now I can help workers impact all of the families that they're working with. So just slowly expanding my reach. And then certainly as I became an executive director leader, it's like, okay, now I can help whole organization and all the people in it and all the families and people and communities that they support. So then this was the natural, logical progression to become a consultant where now I'm helping and have the privilege of working with a multitude of different nonprofit organizations to help each of them deepen their social impact.
So Lori, when you went from being on the front line and implementing some of these programs and interacting with participants and beneficiaries of these programs, then up through the ranks to management and then to the executive tier, what was the hardest thing to transition when you were going through that? Did you miss being on the front line and implementing the projects? Did you really lean into the leadership and strategy? What would you say was the hardest thing when you were going through those transitions?
I think my calling honestly was more at the organizational level. So being in executive leadership positions. So I really flourished because, again, I like that big picture thinking. I like evolving and affecting change. In terms of what was hard when I started making the shift, I became a manager of a team that I have been part of. So that was very tricky to navigate how relationships changed and leading people that you had formerly been working with as a peer. But I had a great group of folks that I had worked with, and they made the transition quite simple and quite easy. And it was a fabulous experience.
A lot of times it can be challenging for people who are those frontline workers and are delivering the programs to then be okay stepping back and thinking more strategically and thinking more about the big picture because they kind of miss rolling up their sleeves. So, you know, since we're talking about strategy today, I was actually curious about your own journey in that area. So let's talk about strategy. Let's just talk terminology right now. What is your definition of strategy when clients come to you or when you're supporting organizations and we're just starting from the very beginning? How do you define strategy when you're working with third sector organizations?
What a fabulous place to start and a great question. There are a multitude of different definitions of strategy out there. And one of the things that it's important to consider in doing any strategy development is being clear on not just the definition of strategy itself, but the terms that are within a strategy. Sometimes it drives me batty because you've got objectives and goals and KPIs, and you've got measures and tactics and actions. And so it is important to develop a common language and common understanding. I like to view and define strategy as a process. It's your story, your organization's path, and a plan based upon strategic choices to move from the current state to a desired state to create your competitive edge. And I'm just going to say that again because I think it's important for listeners to get clear on. Strategy is a process. It's your story, your organization's path, and a plan based upon strategic choices to move from your current state to a desired future state to create your competitive edge. It's a disciplined process. It's based upon strategic thinking and discovery. It's about ultimately creating values for your stakeholders. And a common misunderstanding is seeing strategy or strategic planning as a set of projects or initiatives and falling into the trap of using things that are already in action or already in play and defining that as your strategy. But if you just think about the term itself, strategic planning, it's two words. There's the strategic part and there's the planning part. And just a point of clarification that you can have strategy and you can apply strategy throughout your organization. It can be particular to a project, to a department. And then strategic planning is your organizational approach, your overall strategy. So if you think about strategic planning as being two separate and independent words, the strategy includes things like assessing your current state, completing a trend analysis, what's happening in other fields that have an impact on the field that you work within, developing your vision or your future desired state. And then the planning is identifying the steps that will help get you there. And strategic planning helps organizations set their goals, prioritize their resources, and make informed decisions about the future. And it allows for a proactive approach to addressing challenges and opportunities and can help ensure alignment between the organization's mission, vision, values, and actions.
So if we're talking about strategic planning and this concept of strategy development, when you go in and start working with organizations or even from your own personal experience, what do people get wrong? What do they misunderstand about strategic planning or strategy development?
Another fabulous question. I think the first thing that people often get wrong or the first thing that people often misunderstand is knowing what strategy is and understanding strategy. So I think it's great that we started by defining what it is. ultimately, strategic planning can enhance an organization's effectiveness and increase its chances of success. It's all completed with the intent of focusing your energy, aligning your stakeholders, allocating resources to advance your vision and mission. An important part of the process is to gain clarity and focus. And so we ask questions like, why do we exist? What problem are we trying to solve? What impact do we wish to have in the world? Whom do we do it for? Who's your ideal client? And what does the community need us to be? What would happen if we didn't exist? And then we help by getting clear, asking ourselves things like, what does success look like? And the whole intent is to dig deeper and gain more clarity and discover who we really are, who you really are, and what your focus is. I think another misunderstanding is that organizations don't necessarily understand the benefit or the outcomes of strategy and strategic planning. They maybe see it as a nice to do, a bonus versus a must do. And you may have nonprofit organizations and leaders that have had a prior experience with strategy and it hasn't gone well. And so they dread it or avoid it or simply stay away from it. However, strategy and strategic planning is necessary for long-term growth and sustainability. So it's important to recognize some of the key benefits, including getting really clear on your niche and what it is that's unique about yourself and developing your competitive advantage, because nonprofits do face competitiveness in the field. If saying competitiveness makes you feel uncomfortable, consider it as a comparative. So nonprofits are competing in this day and age, particularly for employees, attracting in different kinds of resources, funders, new partnerships, suppliers. But strategy and strategic planning builds your credibility. Others see that you have a vision, you have a long-term goals for sustainability. Again, it builds efficiencies, it aligns your stakeholders, and in particular your staff, because you want your staff to all be in rhythm and focusing their efforts and energies towards the same outcomes. It brings clarity, provides that focus, and propels nonprofit organizations into action, leading you to feel more confident as opposed to overwhelmed and immobilized, which can often happen in the nonprofit world because there are so many demands for service, so many different stakeholders with different interests and needs. Strategy and strategic planning gives you a framework for making decisions. So, for example, saying no, this project or this initiative or this ask isn't in keeping with our priorities, so we're not going to move forward on this, or we're not going to take it on. Therefore, it helps manage scope creep. Or alternatively, yes, this ask, this service, this program absolutely fits with our strategy, with our vision, with our mission and our values. So let's dive in. It's a means to provide greater efficiency in the use of your resources. It allows you to become more proactive and less reactive because you've already scoped out all of your actions. And strategy actually attracts resources. It can also be used as a communication tool. It's a way to show your community and other interested parties what your vision is, what your mission is, your strategy to get there. And certainly those who are aligned with it will be the folks that you attract in as partners, as employees. And additionally, it can be used as your case for support when seeking funding.
I just wanted to go back to the questions that you listed in the very beginning. You had several questions, one of which was, why do we exist? And another one is, what does success look like? What is success? One of the things that I find a lot of small to medium, so even the large charities struggle with is everyone likes to say, well, we're trying to work ourselves out of a job, right? Once we address whatever the purpose is that we were created to address, we're going to shut down and go home. But that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case. Now, granted, a lot of things that charities are trying to address, whether it's animal abuse, climate change, elder care, protecting children, these are all still things that society is suffering from. But there does seem to be, as you were sort of alluding to, the scope creep and with the competition for resources as well. How do you manage strategy creep when you have these conversations and say, why do we exist? Do you often find, or do you find at all, that you get pushback, or do you get people who may even get angry that you're asking that question? And how do you manage that creep, whether it's scope creep, strategy creep, whatever kind of creep, if you find organizations are moving away from their core mission and purpose?
So What I tend to see more so when I ask that question is a discovery that people aren't in an alignment on why they exist, which might sound a little bit funny, but we are unique individuals that all come with our different and diverse backgrounds. And nonprofit organizations have a multitude of different stakeholders with different interests. So the whole intent around asking that question is to actually create a space for that conversation and to get clear and to get aligned and to get focused. So I don't necessarily see people getting angry or pushing back. I think that is avoided by the way that you set up that conversation or set up that process. And so people understand that the intent really is discovery and that it's from a place of curiosity and a place of learning and understanding. So it's actually more of a light bulb moment. In terms of how you avoid scope creep or even strategy creep, I think that's one of the main reasons why strategy is important. Again, nonprofit organizations have so many different stakeholders, from their service users, from their funders, from their staff, from their board, different partners. And each of them have a vested interest, but they also have differing needs. And so in trying to accommodate those differing needs, scope creep can land on your doorstep. And so it does need to constantly be in the forefront and re-examined. And when you have that strategy before you, as I said, you can use it as a decision-making tool. And the examples were, yes, this is in keeping with our strategy, our vision, our mission, or no, it doesn't fit. So we're not going to take that on. And the best example of scope creep is, you know, a nonprofit sees a pocket of funding for a particular project and they want to take it on. And they're excited about it. So they invest the time and energy. They find themselves successful. And now they have additional funding. And of course, that funding never covers all aspects of the resources that are needed to introduce, say, it's a new program, it's a new service for their clients. And they have the funding at the onset, and then the funding dissipates, but they continue to keep the program on. And let's say you've done that two or three times, and maybe you do that more the next year, and all of a sudden scope creep has landed, and there it is, and you're stretched thin, delivering more services, more programs with the same staffing, with the same base funding, and it can become very overwhelming and challenging. And the reason why that's so important is because then ultimately other programs are suffering because they're not getting the same amount of due attention, the same amount of due resources. So again, that's why strategy is a really good tool for managing scope creep.
That's a great answer. And I want to go back to how you were talking about funding, how strategy development and strategic planning can help with funding. Everybody is talking about now how the funding landscape seems to have retracted or really hyper-specialized. A lot of my friends who are fundraisers were just saying that it's becoming more and more difficult. So can you talk a little bit about how strategic planning and strategy development can help in the funding area?
Well, I think that having a strategy in and of itself speaks to credibility, speaks to trust, in the sense that here's a nonprofit organization that has taken time and invested energy and resources to create a disciplined, thoughtful approach to where they're going and how they're going to get there, as opposed to flying by the seat of their pants. So again, that can be viewed by your funders and any other potential stakeholders as a real advantage, as a real asset. And you have a means for conversation because you've already gotten more clear on what problem it is that you're trying to solve, the impact that you want to have in the world. And you're just focused and your efforts are aligned. And then ultimately, you should be able to achieve more and be more successful because you focused energy, you focused your efforts. And funders, in all fairness, are more apt to invest in an organization that presents as focused and clear and has an element of sustainability because they have identified not only short-term and immediate plans and goals, but also long-term plans and goals for sustainability.
I can imagine that funders, particularly the larger philanthropic foundations and maybe even some private sector organizations, would really appreciate a well thought through strategy that the organization has. And just from a professionalization point of view, I think it's something that organizations do need to make the time to think more about. You referenced that earlier on, how people think it maybe is a waste of time. So let me ask you this question. When you go in to work with organizations, or in your experience doing strategic planning and strategy development, what are the elements that are quickly embraced? People say, yes, we agree with that. And then what are the elements that are rejected, or where do you get the pushback when you're trying to facilitate this type of work in organizations?
So pushback tends to be when people have to step out, or nonprofit organizations have to step outside their comfort zone. And strategy, I alluded it to it earlier, one of the risk areas is doing more of the same. And so people are human. Creating strategy and strategic planning is a change initiative. People have personal and emotional reactions to change. And that leads to, yes, let's do this. Let's dive in. Let's take this on. Other people are more change adverse, so they're less excited about change. And so that's part of the process when I go in is how do you manage and facilitate in a way that helps to engage people and manage that human component? So that's where I see the biggest pushback is change in and of itself. And you'll appreciate this one, I imagine, Sabrina, is also people's comfort zone with risk. So I think it's important to have a conversation about what your level of risk comfort. Some people are risk averse. Some people are the skydivers and the tightrope walkers who are really comfortable with risk. So it's an important conversation because it can present as a barrier because people are coming from different places and comfort zones related to change or managing risk. So that's where I see the biggest pushback. And in terms of what people embrace, for the most part, people have already embraced the concept of creating a strategy in and of itself. Sometimes the process is hard. So that's why it's important to plan the plan at the onset. There are many different ways that you can engage in a strategic planning process. So starting the discussions by getting clear on what is the best approach for this nonprofit organization. I find a lot of nonprofit organizations embrace the stakeholder engagement approach. At the same time, there might be a little bit of pushback because the feedback is a combination of what's working well, what's not working so well. It's critical feedback. It includes an examination of threats, an examination of opportunities. And so you get lots of diverse feedback from stakeholders. And so some of it is known and understood and welcomed. And sometimes it's a bit of a shocker and defenses unfold and reactions are present. But for the most part, I find that organizations embrace the stakeholder engagement process because they're interested in hearing from their stakeholders. They are interested in doing the best job that they can in meeting their needs. So they want to ask the questions, they want to dig in, and they want to hear from service users, they want to hear from funders, where things are amiss, and where they're doing a great job at meeting those interests and needs. Another area of misunderstanding that I see with strategy and strategic planning is the belief that it's complex. And it certainly doesn't have to be complex. Strategy and their processes should be simple. They should be easy to understand and easy to implement. And when things are done right, then actually as a nonprofit organization, it should bring you relief, clarity, you know where you're going and how you will get there. And it's a simple framework. When I say simple, it's as simple as what's your vision, what's your mission, what's your values, creating a strategy, developing strategic objectives, actions, measures, targets, implementation, and monitoring. Another common misunderstanding is not recognizing that it's actually an iterative process. It's a continuous improvement process. It doesn't have a beginning and end. So there's a continuous element to the strategic priorities, and they're not stopping and they're not ending. If it has an end and it has a beginning, then it's actually probably an operational initiative as opposed to a strategic initiative. which can also be another challenge and risk differentiating between what's strategic and what's operational. And certainly if there's nothing else we've learned over the last few years, having lived through a pandemic, is the need to be ready and agile and be prepared for different scenarios that might lend itself to a different kind of strategy.
I really like how you talk about strategic planning as a change initiative, because I think when you say it, people go, okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. But change, I don't think is necessarily the first word that would come to mind when you're talking about strategy. And so I really like that you put those two concepts together. And change, whether it's good or bad, is still change, like you were saying, and people can be a little change adverse. And bringing it back to risk, if we look at what sort of the international definition of risk is, it's the effect of uncertainty on objectives, and uncertainty brings with it change. So if we're talking about specifically here strategic planning and strategy development, not so much with strategy implementation, but when we're talking about planning and developing the strategy, what would you say are the top three risks, so the top three threats, as well as maybe opportunities around strategic planning that third sector organizations need to be aware of?
In terms of risk, one of the biggest areas of risk starts actually with the vision and the mission and the values. Sometimes they're not understood, they're not communicated well, they may not be integrated into your organizational practice, or they can just lack a little bit of luster and not necessarily be inspirational. So in my experience, the nonprofit field tends to be a little bit wordy when it comes to vision, mission, and values. So I've seen lots of sentences, sometimes paragraphs, lists, 10 values. And the risk in that is you actually lose potential stakeholders and thus potential resources. So again, going back to if it doesn't resonate with the potential employee candidate or a particular partner or funder, then you're going to lose their interest and they're not going to join and engage. You want to connect emotionally through your vision and your mission and your values. You want to create an inspiring and understandable vision and mission that invites your community to be part of it, particularly your staff, as they are the ones who are helping you achieve it, and they're the ones that are implementing it. So for example, if you listen to this, Food Banks Canada, their vision is a Canada where no one is hungry. That's inspiring. That's emotional. I mean, who doesn't want to get behind that? TED Talks. We all listen to TED Talks. Their mission is to spread ideas, foster community, and create impact. Done. 7 words. That's all it took. And it's clear. It's powerful. The vision that I have for my business is that all nonprofits achieve their vision and mission. Can you imagine that kind of a world where all nonprofits achieve their vision and missions? Again, who doesn't want to be part of that? Another area of risk is that often when nonprofits dive into planning their strategy, they take on too many priorities or they have too little prioritization. I often like to use the analogy of a charcuterie board to help illustrate this point. You know, if you look at the charcuterie board, everything is desirable. You're salivating. You want to have it all. So you might start out, you take a little from the fruit section, and maybe you grab a little bit of cheese and a little bit of meat, and then you go back for more, and eventually you become stuffed. And so planning your priorities is the same. We want to do so much and have significant impact. And we might take on this project here, add this service here, and then we decide to partake in this initiative. And soon you can become overwhelmed or immobilized because you've bitten off more than you can chew. And I often like to quote Jim Collins from the Good to Great book, where he said that if you have more than 3 priorities, then you don't have priorities at all. And you've just stretched yourself too thin. Unrealistic goal setting is another area that organizations can struggle with, or it can be an area of risk. Sometimes setting lofty goals that are simply unachievable. So for example, we'd like to increase the uptake by 30% when the last 5 years of data have said that the most that's ever been achieved is 15%. So is it realistic to think that you could do 30%? I'm not saying you wouldn't necessarily if you have some data or some reason or rationale, but sometimes people just choose targets that they hope for, that they would want, but it needs to be founded in some data and some reality. Having too many goals is another area of risk. or the goals can be ambiguous or not communicated well and translated throughout the organization, and in particular to those who are implementing, such as your staff. I've also seen where organizations will just jump into the how or the activities rather than digging in and getting clear on the outcomes and the results the organization wants to achieve first and developing the actions that will help get them there. Alignment is an important part of creating your strategy. The strategy can be misunderstood by stakeholders. There can be a lack of organizational alignment. And so people can be rowing the boat and headed in different directions. It's important to have energy and synergy for the long haul of your strategic plan so that it doesn't end up on the shelf collecting dust. It's important to not assume that you know who your stakeholders are. So when I'm working with organizations, one of the early activities we do is we actually engage in a stakeholder analysis. And so we examine who the different kinds of stakeholders are, but we also look at their level of interest and the influence that they have in the organization. And then you look at how you want to engage them in your strategy or your strategic planning process. And the obvious stakeholders are your staff, your service users, your funders, your donors, your community, and other partners. An important consideration in stakeholder engagement is that many nonprofit organizations that serve clients that have experienced trauma need to consider the best way to engage those clients. So taking on a trauma-informed approach is an important strategy or an important way to ensure that you create a safe space for people who have experienced trauma to actually engage in the process. If you actually want to get honest, frank feedback on how your services or programs are seen and viewed by stakeholders, then you want to create that safe space. And so this also includes people from diverse backgrounds. And so it's important to consider inclusion, diversity, and equity in your entire strategy and strategic planning process. So how are you creating a safe space for people from different backgrounds to be able to share their opinions freely?
So you've listed a lot of really, really important areas as to why strategy is useful, valuable, necessary. If somebody's listening today and they're saying, you know, my organization is just not taking strategy seriously enough, or everyone says we want to do strategy, we just don't have the time. What could be a very impactful business case to carve out the resources necessary to either make the time for the board members and the senior leadership team to get together, or maybe even hiring a consultant like you, or just going on a retreat? If somebody got 15 minutes with the CEO of the organization and just said, you know, things are going well, but we haven't really had the time to put a strategy together. And if they are facing people going, oh, well, you know, we just don't have the time, we don't have the resources, or everybody knows what's going on, we don't need to do this. What's a really impactful way to advocate for carving out that space and those resources to formally sit down and do strategic planning?
So I think you can actually build in a lot of efficiency by engaging in strategic planning or a strategy process. So time is the biggest resource that organizations wish they had more of. And so to engage in a strategic planning process is really an opportunity to look at your impact. And so looking at what are the things we want to start doing, what are the things we want to continue doing, and what are the things that we want to stop doing? So I think that's one of the ways that a nonprofit organization can examine the return on investment of engaging in a strategic planning process. Nonprofits are forever seeking new ways to obtain funding, and certainly having a strong case for support, having a strong strategy that speaks to your long-term plans and your long-term goals and focuses on growth and sustainability is a powerful way to build your credibility and to engage your stakeholders and to have stakeholders that want to financially invest in your organization. In this day and age, there is so much competitiveness that is happening in the field. And when I say competitive, I don't mean that nonprofits are, you know, trying to take each other out. I'm just talking about resources can be seen as scarce. But I think when managed with strategy, you can actually discover a wealth of resources that are out there and certainly use that to your advantage. And so with all of the competitiveness that exists, it's so valuable to be clear on what your uniqueness is and what it is that you offer and provide to the community, and how you do it in a way that is unique to other nonprofit organizations. And again, that's a way of attracting in funding and certainly supporting your long-term viability and sustainability.
I really like how you were just talking about efficiency. And I like those three points that you mentioned. What do we want to start? What do we want to continue? And what do we want to stop? I think that is a very, very impactful way to frame the strategy development and strategic planning exercise. And I think you can say that to somebody and immediately they'll get the concept of it. So I like wrapping that around efficiency. I like how you framed that. And a similar question following up on, you know, if someone wants to go in and talk to the CEO or the founder or the managing director, but going one level above that to board members, right? So for nonprofits and charities, oftentimes board members are volunteers. They believe in the mission and the purpose of the organization, but maybe they've never been on a board before. They're not quite sure what the role is. They may not want to speak up because they're afraid of embarrassing themselves in the board meetings, or maybe they feel like if they do speak up, they might end up doing more harm than good. So if board members are listening today and they're saying, yeah, you know what, strategic planning is really key, and I feel like we aren't doing it well enough, or we're not doing it the right way, or they really want to emphasize to the senior leadership team that strategic planning is important, what are some ways that board members can do that? Are there specific questions that they can ask to the senior leadership team? Is there data that they can request from them? Are there other people that they can ask to come and speak to the boards during their sessions? Lori, if you're advising a board member or a board, how can they get involved in a constructive and positive way?
So in the past, historically, strategic planning or strategy was often a process that was led and solely treated by boards. More and more people are adopting a collaborative process. So you might have an actual strategic planning committee, and the role of the board is about monitoring the strategy and not about implementation per se. So it starts with what kinds of conversations are being had at the board level. And I think framing it as strategy development as a supportive resource that can help executive leadership, that can help a nonprofit organization deepen their impact, is a way that a board member can spark that conversation and look to it as the tool that can help the organization and pool achieve its vision and mission. I think the other thing I would say to your board members is strategic planning can seem scary, overwhelming, confusing. Just recognize that it doesn't have to be that way, and to not be hesitant to speak up, because it is a very good resource that can really help a nonprofit deepen their social impact. And so in and of itself, it's a strategy for long-term growth and sustainability.
I think that makes a lot of sense. It ties back to a lot of the things that you were saying earlier, how strategic planning gives you a competitive edge. Going back to the why do we exist question, right? Boards should be able to answer that question. And that's a key question when you're doing the strategic planning. And maybe bringing the boards on board, so to speak, with the fact that this is a change initiative. And again, tone at the top, I've found, particularly around the risk elements, are really important. That the board is aligned. And then the board is not only demonstrating their alignment to the rest of the organization, but the board is also holding those senior leaders accountable to ensure that they stay within that alignment. So I think your points throughout all of this about why strategic planning and strategy development are valuable make a lot of sense. And going back to what you were saying in the very beginning, it's like a puzzle. Each one of these points that you're raising is one piece of the puzzle that's then going to create this final image of what are the competitive advantages and what are the success factors that the organization has to be able to articulate and measure and put in place so that it can reach its purpose and its mission. So it all is making perfect sense. So this area of strategy development and strategic planning has changed over time. And so people who might want to learn more about this, people who are curious about what you're talking about and want to dive into it in more detail, where can they go to learn more about this concept? Do you have any continuing education opportunities, suggestions that people can participate in, other blogs they can read, other podcasts that they can listen to? Where can people go to learn more about this topic?
There is a ton of great information, of course, that exists on the internet. It can be daunting and overwhelming. So it's important to kind of narrow your search and know exactly what it is that you're hoping to discover. But one of the greatest strategies, I would say, actually, is find organizations or consultants that actually provide this as a service and then follow them, whether it's on LinkedIn, YouTube, or other social media spaces. They often have email lists that you can join. And so their posts, their emails will provide you with a pile of informative information. You'll get tips, you'll get solutions. They often give you free guides. They often offer free webinars. Sometimes there's templates. Example, if you went to my website, I have a guide plotting the course for success, 7 strategic planning essentials for nonprofits. Some other great resources would include a fellow Canadian, Rebecca Southern. She recently created a book called Sightline, and she actually did it with what we're talking about today in mind for organizations that are looking to embark upon a strategic planning process. It's a simple read. She walks you through it step by step, and it includes some templates. I also like and recommend the book called Nonprofit Strategy by Michael Stone. And what I like about this book is it identifies that there are different stages in the development of a nonprofit, and that you actually need to match your strategy to the stage of development that your nonprofit is at. A great US-based resource is called Prosper Strategies. They are an organization of strategic advisors. And I recommend, because they have a lot of do-it-your-own tools and educational materials and resources. So if you're looking, how do we do our vision, mission, and values? They got a whole section on that. How do we set our actions? They've got a whole section on that. The other consideration is that most communities will have some kind of pro bono consultation service. So asking around, again, doing a bit of a search. And then I would just say, look to your other nonprofit organizations. Maybe someone has an employee with that skill set. Maybe they know a particular service. Maybe they know a particular resource. And how can you swap services? So maybe you have a skill set in this area that you can offer to another nonprofit, and in return, they have something that they can share with you that would be a benefit.
I think those are great suggestions. And Lori, what is the name of your website and where can people find you if they want to get in touch and they have more questions?
So I'm mostly hanging out on LinkedIn, and you can find me Lori Stanley Nonprofit Consulting, and Lori is L-O-R-I, and my website is nonprofitconsulting.ca. I am based out of Canada, and I tend to venture over to Europe a lot. And so for your European listeners, I'm certainly happy to travel and come visit. But my services are also very deliverable virtually. So don't hesitate to reach out.
Wonderful. So we're reaching the end of our time, but before we close out, is there anything that you want to add? Any parting words of wisdom for third sector organizations when it comes to strategic planning and strategy development?
I think the only other piece that I would add is don't be afraid to adjust your plan as you work through it. Unintended consequences can unfold, unexpected events can unfold, and you can reprioritize as needed. You can adjust for changes in the environment, invite critique, examine misses, and adopt a lessons learned approach. There's lots of fabulous things to be gleaned and learned from feedback from stakeholders or things that haven't unfolded in the way that we would have wanted it to.
Oh, I think that's great advice. Yeah, lessons learned and not being afraid to learn from the failures. But going back to what you said earlier on, how strategic planning is a change initiative and change is the only constant. So embracing that as well. Really great advice. So thank you so much for your time today, Lori. I really appreciate it. I have learned a lot, and I know that the people who are listening to the episode today have learned a lot too. So Lori Stanley, you all can find her on LinkedIn. And thank you so much, Lori. It's been great chatting with you.
It's been a pleasure.
So that's our show for today. Please remember to like, subscribe, and follow us for all your third sector risk information. Thanks for listening to Tolerable Risk.